From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on the rolling hills of a family coffee farm in Brazil. The family farm is fair trade certified. So if you buy a bag of its beans in a store, you may see that fair trade label right there on the package. But here's a question for you. Do you know what fair trade really means? Can you define it? At the basic level, fair trade farmers work with a collective to help get their products to buyers in countries like the United States. And under fair trade certifications, those buyers pay the farmers a fair price and ensure its laborers have decent work conditions. The goal of fair trade is to reduce poverty for workers in developing countries and to help them build up their communities. But the critics say fair trade isn't always all it's cracked up to be, particularly with coffee. Now, they argue that the system can be inefficient in transferring consumers' goodwill to producers, doesn't always help producers who are most in need. Some argue that direct trade is more efficient and sustainable. So what's the best thing you can do as a consumer to ensure you're buying socially and environmentally friendly products? This hour, our guests are going to help us understand everything we know about fair trade, direct trade, other kinds of purchasing that will help you understand where your dollars are going, the benefits and the drawbacks, and how it might affect your purchasing decisions, especially right here around the holidays. And let's go ahead and welcome our guests here, including Paula Macas-Bechert. And Paula is a workers' rights advocate for the Worker Justice Center of New York. She is the founder of NUA Imports. And Paula is the reason we're here today. She had an idea. She said, you know, you wanted us to think about where our dollars are going and who they're impacting. So why don't you tell us what NUA Imports is, Paula?
Sure. Thanks, Evan, and thanks, Megan, and everybody, actually, that makes this show possible.
Yeah.
I really wanted to talk about the conscious shopping, really, because this, especially this time of the year, as you said, because we are, you know, making wish lists and trying to buy presents, but really how we are thinking about those things, and do we really need things, and where to buy, where to look for. So NUA means women in an indigenous language from the Amazon in Ecuador. So I started NUA Imports because I really believe that solidarity is a tool for social change. And being Ecuadorian and being a woman, I wanted to work with women in Ecuador and indigenous peoples in Ecuador. I have been working with social movements for more than 15 years now. And they've always asked me, can you help us sell products that we make? And I always was busy doing something else and working towards like advocacy and other things. And finally, 2 years ago, I decided that I wanted to make these relationships more formal. And so I spent the last two years, really trying to make relationships with 8 groups in Ecuador. They all need to be connected with a social movement or need to do some sustainable work using sustainable materials, natural dyes, and or need to be paying living wages. For me, it's very important to have a connection with the people that I'm working with that it's direct. You know, we're going to be talking about what really fair trade is, but for me, it's really important to create a structures of transparency so we can all be accountable to each other.
Okay. Well, thanks for being here. Also here is Renee Colon, co-owner of Fuego Coffee Roasters in Rochester. And Renee will have a lot to say about the coffee part of the world. Before we jump in there, how long has Fuego been around and where are you sourcing beans from, Renee?
We've been around for 4.5 years now.
Okay.
And we're getting coffee all over the world. Like, you name a coffee that's growing country and we're sourcing it.
Okay. So thank you for being here as well. Gavin Thomas, co-founder of This Good World. If you've heard of This Good World or maybe seen label, heard about it around town here, it has grown a lot. Launched when? What's the short backstory of This Good World?
Sure. So This Good World started about 6 years ago now. So it's really been a labor of love by our team at TGW Studio. And it's one of the products that we've been working on for quite a while. And really, the background of This Good World, my co-founder Lisa and I really wanted to find and support businesses who matched our value set. And it was really hard to find those businesses. So we set out to build a tool that makes it a little bit easier to do that. So basically, it's a website, an app that you can go on and find businesses all across the country and in some cases internationally, a lot of digitally based, online based companies as well, and just allows you to find businesses that match your value set.
And what is your value set? What drove that in the first place?
So I think we'll talk about this quite a bit, but it's important for us to kind of remember and push out there that everybody has their own definition of what that term good is. We'll talk about that a lot with fair trade and direct trade, but really it's an individual preference or style of, you know, your being and the way you live and the way you want to spend your dollars and use your voice. So.
Well, thank you for being here.
Sure, absolutely.
And online where, as people go throughout the conversation to see more about what you're doing?
Sure, thisgoodworld.com.
Maya Spall is on the line with us, and she is a Rochester native who's now based in San Francisco as the Vice President of the Manufacturing Program at Fairtrade USA. Maya, welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi. Thanks so much for having me, Evan. It's so great to be on a call with and on a show with all these great kindred spirits. I work at Fairtrade USA. We're the labeling agency behind the movement of fair trade, and I'm really excited to talk to you about the work that we've been doing for the last 20 years.
All right, so and Maya's going to be able to talk to us as the Vice President of the Manufacturing Program about things that you might not immediately think about when it comes to fair trade. If fair trade conjures to mind coffee or coffee and chocolate, it goes well beyond that. And again, it's not just a fair trade conversation, but let's start there. Let's start with some of the questions that people may have about what it actually means. And so, Maya, can I start with you and just, can you give the audience a short definition, whether it's a bag of coffee or a home good, something that's manufactured, when they see fair trade, what is the definition for what that means?
Absolutely. When you see a fair trade certified product, it's your guarantee that it was traded in a more ethical way. And really that boils down to safe and better working conditions, improved livelihoods, and protection for the environment. And Fairtrade USA is a leading third-party certifier of fair trade goods. We conduct rigorous audits at producer groups, whether it's farmers or in factories in 72 countries around the world. And then our work is to also engage consumers. And we've spent the last 20 years really building a movement so that when you see that fair trade label on the product, it's your guarantee that it's your way to basically vote with your dollars and make a positive change in the world and know that that product is giving back to the people that work so hard to grow that coffee bean or sew that shirt.
All right, and so let's go ahead and let me go ahead and quote from an article that is often shared when people are looking for, looking at coffee and trying to understand it and maybe looking at some of the criticisms, because we'll start with coffee and then we'll go broader with fair trade. This is from the Huffington Post about some of the criticisms and some of the concerns that, you know, that people will pay more, but is it actually helping? So one of the things that was interesting is that the Huffington Post found that studies are finding Americans especially are willing to pay more. If we can feel good about where the money is going and actually understand it, we will pay more. So let me read directly from the piece. Quote, "The fair trade system is inefficient at transferring coffee consumers' goodwill to producers. In an experiment run by graduate students in San Francisco, they found that the median coffee drinker is willing to pay a premium of 50 cents per cup for fair trade coffee." And by the way, that's a lot. But going back to the piece here, however, they find that even in the best case scenario for fair trade, when world prices are at their lowest, the maximum amount a fair trade grower from that same cup of coffee would receive is only 1/3 of 1 cent. Direct trade is probably more efficient and sustainable than fair trade. Under direct trade, a coffee buyer contracts directly with specific growers overseas to offer a higher coffee price, often in exchange for a higher quality product and a long-term relationship. Although direct trade is certainly not a panacea, more real value is created in the system, making it an arguably more efficient means of transmitting resources from coffee drinkers to coffee growers. End quote. Renee Colon from Fuego Coffee Roasters, do you agree? I mean, you're a direct trade company, so I imagine you're going to agree, but let's get specific. Do you think that does tell the story accurately when it comes to fair trade and coffee?
I really do believe so. We have definitely sourced certified fair trade coffee before, and fair trade is great. However, we more and more, the longer we're growing as a business, we want to focus more on direct trade. We have had the opportunity to visit farms in both Puerto Rico and Guatemala, in addition to doing direct trade through importers. But by doing direct trade and meeting the farmers and going to the farms, we can see exactly what's going on there, exactly how they're growing things, exactly what the working conditions are like. And when we put the money in the farmer's hand, we know exactly how much the farmer's getting paid.
And do you think that the farmers you're working with in a direct trade fashion through Fuego are getting paid better or at least more representative wages than they would through fair trade?
I believe so, yes. I can't say exactly how much they get paid through fair trade because I'm not the one making the transaction. You know, I'm not
sure.
On the end.
To be fair, yeah.
And when we are working directly with the farmer, we know exactly how much they're getting paid. And they can approach us with concerns and say, we'd really like to do this more environmental thing, whatever, whatever. Would you be willing to pay more per pound for green coffee to allow us to be able to do that?
Isn't that an interesting part of this story, Renee, that this study that the Huffington Post cites probably lines up with what we would assume, and I'm sure Gavin can talk about, I think everybody can probably talk about this. People will, on balance, pay a little bit more, sometimes a lot more, if they really do feel good about where that money is going. You found that to be true with your customers?
Oh, absolutely.
That is a core part of it. I mean, Gavin, I think that's very encouraging here. At the very least, people are willing to vote with their wallets to help people directly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, regardless of industry, we talk about coffee and consumer products in general. I think that's an easy one to grasp because we all make those transactions on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, going back to our value set, if there's something that a company out there that I know supports, something that I really care deeply about, whether it be environmental causes or, you know, if I'm a big backer of fair trade or direct trade, I have the ability to make those decisions at the consumer level. But even, you know, we talk about businesses who work with other businesses. These are, you know, social and environmental impact is such a growing movement. And I think one that on a financial level certainly makes a lot of sense for a lot of companies and a lot of consumers. And it's really showing in the types of transactions that are happening today.
I'm going to turn to Maya in a second, but I do want to make sure we hit some definitions here because this is a very educational hour for me. I've been learning a lot, not just in reading, preparing for this program, but I hope our listeners do too. Because like anybody else, you go to the store, you see organic on a label. You see sustainable on a label. You go to the wine shop, you see green wines. There are buzzwords everywhere. Some of them mean something, some of them mean nothing. And if they don't have any codified meaning, it's important to know that and to know then what it means. Because fair trade does have actual meaning that is codified, whereas direct trade less so, I think, Renee Colon, right? Which just means if I'm a Fuego customer and you tell me you're direct trade, that doesn't mean it's within, that just means you're going directly to the source, but it doesn't mean there's an international direct trade organization that gets you certified for that, right?
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's definitely direct trade is a case-by-case basis.
Okay. So if I'm your customer, I'm going to say, great, what does that mean to you? And then you can say, well, my husband and I go to Puerto Rico. We go to Guatemala. We're looking at other places that we can go. And this is exactly where we've been. And then as your customer, I have that information. So that's really valuable to know. The direct trade just means ask questions, get more specifics. And some think it's more efficient, especially in coffee, or better for the growers. Now, Maya, let's start with coffee, and then we'll go broader here. And we'll bring in Paola and some other voices as well. Let's start with coffee, Maya. Do you think those criticisms that the Huffington Post raised, at least when it comes to coffee, are fair?
You know, I think when we get into the debate between fair trade and direct trade, it's a fine conversation to have. I'd love to see those statistics. I mean, you know, I can tell you that we, through our third-party audits, we verify that, you know, a certain amount of money, let's say 25 to 50 cents, goes directly back to the cooperative and to the farmers and the coffee farms. So, you know, I'm not so sure about those statistics. But for me, to be honest, I think the real question and the real conversation is that direct trade, fair trade, that kind of sourcing still makes up such a small percentage of the overall global market that any effort that goes above and beyond traditional sourcing, where we're not taking into account the cost of production and where we're not thinking about supporting good livelihoods, you know, I think really we need to focus on the fact that all of these are better than sort of typical trade. So that's where it comes with me. I think these are all good efforts, and I think it's a rising tide. And you're right about the consumer movement. We have seen such a dramatic increase in interest. You know, 67% of consumers now know the Fair Trade Certified label and are purchasing those products. It's a really exciting time, and more businesses are also stepping up to do the right thing.
And so, Maya, I think the reason I don't disagree with the sentiment that, you know, anything better than sort of the standard is probably a step in the right direction. The one concern I have is that if consumers start to feel like a label is either meaningless or doesn't deliver what it promises, then in the marketplace of ideas, it can lose some steam. In the same way that for some people, organic has, or, you know, there's any. So Farm to Table, the Tampa Bay Times did this remarkable investigation about how Farm to Table doesn't technically have any meaning. And in some places in the Tampa Bay area, restaurants claim it's Farm to Table and it's from 2,000 miles away. Well, when people start to find that out, they're going to think it doesn't mean anything anywhere. I'm not saying that's where we're going with fair trade. I'm just saying I think people want to know that it's not only better than the average, but it's a lot better. It might even pull people out of poverty. So let's talk beyond that, Maya. Let's talk beyond coffee, because what you do for your work as part of the manufacturing program at Fairtrade USA is you work with companies that Patagonia, West Elm, there's a lot out there. Why don't you tell us more about what you're doing in that division and how it is helping the people who are creating those products?
Absolutely. So we've seen the fair trade movement and the fair trade certified model move beyond the food and the agricultural sector. And I've been, you know, had the opportunity to spearhead that work in the manufacturing sector. So Fairtrade USA now certifies clothing. We certify home goods. We have a little bit of footwear, and working with some of these companies to go into factories where traditionally, most workers in the global south in factories make an average of about $4 to $5 a day. And so to support companies that want to ensure that people are making way above that salary, to ensure that people are safe. You know, we have a lot of issues in factories with sweatshops and long hours. And so, you know, we have found that it's a really pivotal time to offer a different kind of option, to certify these factories, to work hand in hand with management, with the employees on the floor. For too long, people who sew our clothes and manufacture, you know, our furniture have been nameless and faceless. And with Fairtrade, we're really working with some of the leading companies to change that paradigm and remind everyone that behind everything you put on, there's a pair of hands, and there's a mother, there's a sister, there's people who have expectations and goals for their life. And together, when we support programs like Fairtrade, we can ensure that they're meeting their life goals as well.
Maya, I admit that in some ways I'm embarrassed to say this, but I did not grow up, I didn't grow up in an educational system that taught me to think about where are your clothes coming from. I had to kind of figure that out as an adult. You know, what's the source of this, and what does it mean for the people who are making them? Why is it difficult to find American-made clothing, or at least clothing that I can feel like the people making it are not living in poverty, et cetera, et cetera. So now that I think more people, at least certainly me, but certainly others, are kind of waking up to this, I think they will have a very specific question about what fair trade means. Because you're right, all of those values are important, and these are real people behind these products. And the more we learn about factory conditions and what people are paid, it can be very difficult. So let me ask a direct question then. Fair Trade USA works with, I think, Patagonia as an example. So people who are behind the production of products for Patagonia, what's the baseline? What are they? Are any of them still living in poverty? Is it sort of, impossible to make a whole systemic change overnight? Or maybe you have done that. What are the specifics that you can give us to know that Patagonia, for example, that are fair trade products, you know, what does it mean for those workers?
Absolutely. So one thing that I think is really important in this proliferation of labels and titles and, you know, sustainable and direct trade, fair trade, is that we have to come back to third-party rigorous audits. We have to know that at least once a year, we have someone going in, checking. You know, these audit points are 300 criteria in which we're looking deeply at what are the working conditions, where are the fire exits in this factory, how many hours are people working, what are they getting paid? And then by understanding the baseline and helping them improve over time, the quality of life, the quality of the workday greatly improves. So the guarantee that comes when you purchase a pair of Athleta, fair trade workout pants or a Patagonia fleece is that a percentage of that purchase price and the sale price to consumer goes directly back to a bank account that's managed by the workforce at that factory. And then together they decide how to spend it on education, on healthcare, on housing. Perhaps it's more cash because they just need, some more food on the table. So the guarantee behind that is really about more income directly into the hands of the workers, as well as the baseline of ensuring that people are safe every day when they go to work.
Okay. And so somebody tonight listening to this program is going to be in the Eastview Mall Athleta store. I guarantee it. So if they do that and they're looking at fair trade, you said a percentage of that purchase. Do we know what the percentage is?
Yes, it depends. It's roughly 1-3% of that purchase. Okay. It depends on the livelihoods needed in that factory, which is quite substantial. And in fact, every year, the Fair Trade Certified Organization, along with the 1,200 companies across coffee, bananas, chocolate, apparel, $50 million in extra fair trade money go directly back to farmers and workers. And so that's where you see this tangible difference. And all of that is audited so that we can prove back to consumers and to all of these companies, yes, indeed, this money did go back. So it's pretty substantial. You see 5 cents per bag of coffee and a fair trade premium, 1%, which is maybe it's like 25 cents going back to the workers. When that accumulates, you get approximately $50 to $60 million a year. And that's growing every year because our business is growing with fair trade. It's a pretty astounding number.
Okay. Gavin Thomas, as the co-founder of This Good World, let's weigh in on some of what you're hearing here. Fair trade, and then what it means to be sort of this in the this good world when it comes to manufactured goods. What do you think?
Sure. Yeah. So I think one of the things that we try to do is just be kind of an aggregate of all of the different certifications out there. First and foremost, when our team is doing research to, you know, go out and identify these types of companies. But a big piece of what we do is get submissions from our users as well, because they know, you know, much more than we do. If they're a resident out in LA, they know, you know, from small coffee shops or, you know, larger manufacturers in the LA area, they're always going to know better than we are here in Rochester what types of companies, you know, share their values and kind of act, use their business as a force for good, as kind of cheesy as that sounds, but it is really important. So we try to identify not only, you know, as a team ourselves, but, you know, rely on our users to provide us with that type of information and content, and then kind of work through to kind of disperse that information out into the wild, so to speak. So allow consumers who, you know, actively want to be supporting these types of companies. And I think it's really important, too, because it's not just the, you know, consumers want to, you know, want to look in the right places, and it's really hard to find these types of companies, but it's also really hard to remember to do that in general. So I think that's something that's important to this discussion. It's a lot of this is about habit. A lot of people want to be doing these types of things, but just remembering to do that, it's sometimes very hard.
Okay, and when it comes to systems, you know, Gavin, I remember just about a year or two ago, we were looking at how clothing was created. Planet Money did this really, really interesting piece that kind of tracked a couple of different pieces of apparel and where they're made and what it means. And some of the knee-jerk response when people start to learn this stuff is, I will never buy clothing that's made in pick a country that you often see. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, those people, that's not good enough. And the Planet Money story told us that if we all did that tomorrow, those people who are struggling and working in bad conditions all of a sudden have no conditions to work in. So it's not as simple as saying overnight, don't buy those clothes.
Sure.
But it is a question of how we get to systemic change. You agree with that sort of
Absolutely.
Conundrum we have?
Yeah. And I think, you know, every small change, as we pile small change upon small change, that over time will result in bigger change and a more systematic change in societal, you know, purchase habits and behaviors. So I think that's something really important to keep in mind, that even small changes in this world and, you know, regardless of certification or if it's, you know, these companies putting out messaging into the world, sure, there's greenwashing that, you know, certainly could be taken and misconstrued. Obviously, if you're misleading consumers, that's one thing that's completely horrible, but also important to remember that consumers are very smart, and sometimes all it takes is, you know, one person to find out you're not telling the truth, and, you know, that does far more damage than anything you would have gained by, you know, talking about the good thing that you're doing.
Let me turn back to Paula. Go ahead, Paula.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that fair trade, more than a label and beyond the label, it's really a social movement. And so I think we need to realize that we are all partners in this. And I feel like when you're talking about labels and thinking, well, maybe consumers are not going to trust the label, but I think that we do have to, as consumers, I think, be well informed and also try to learn those stories. Because if you just want to, you know, it's like we're trying to make it easy for the consumer. So I just see the label and take it. But really, it's about learning the stories of the product and learning how this product was made. Beyond the labels, because I was just sharing earlier with Gavin that with the people that I'm working with in Ecuador, these aid groups, maybe there would be no way for them to go through the whole process of getting a certification,
right?
Because it's very hard. These are very small.
They're small producers.
Producers,
right?
Really, yeah. Small producers. So I'm trying to create a platform to connect these people with the consumers. But for that, I really need consumers that are conscious, that don't know that they are not just getting a product, but they are getting a story. They are getting a fairness. They are being part of a team. They are being part of a process that it's perhaps not perfect quite yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah, Paula is raising a really interesting point, and I want to grab our first phone call that touches on this question on, you know, can you afford to pay for certification? What does that mean? And this is Anne in Rochester. Go ahead, Anne.
Yes, hi. Evan, I'm so excited. Thank you so much. I love your show.
Thanks.
I'm really interested in this conversation. Specifically, as a former Peace Corps volunteer, I lived in the Dominican Republic and worked with a community of small, predominantly subsistence farmers who were farming coffee. And this was a common discussion that we often would have because there were several large businesses that my community would actually sell their
coffee
to. I
can't hear the caller.
And they weren't able to afford any sort of certification through fair trade because they were such small.
Now, John, I can't hear the caller either here. Okay, so Anne, hold on one second there. This is a new phone system, and this is the first bug in our system. So we've got a dedicated caller. They can no longer hear. Anne, are you there, Anne?
Yes.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead, please.
So I'm not sure where I got cut off, but I was living in a small community of coffee farmers who were unable to produce coffee under the fair trade label because they are such small producers, as Paola was mentioning. And so my comment is really just to kind of add to the conversation that while fair trade is important in terms of a label, that it doesn't always include everyone who is producing coffee in a way, or, you know, other goods in a way that could be supported by local connections or direct access, as you've been talking about with Fuego and what Paola is doing with her project. And so while fair trade does benefit lots of different communities and maybe cooperatives or larger mid-sized companies, there are lots of small producers of agricultural coffee farmers in the DR, for example, that aren't really benefiting from that at all because they can't afford the certification.
Sure.
or going through that process, the legal process that's involved with that as well.
And thank you. I think this is so valuable. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to relay your comment first to Maya Spall, who's on the line with us, who is the Vice President of the Manufacturing Program at Fairtrade USA. And so thanks, Anne, for that. Maya, the point that Anne is raising is she is a former Peace Corps volunteer who, you know, worked in coffee farming communities and saw that fair trade can be great for companies that are well established. But there are cases where you've got farmers that, you know, maybe can't afford to pay for certification, or communities that are sort of a different level of need. And that is not to diminish or malign fair trade writ large, but it's perhaps a criticism that says the people who would need it the most can't get in the door with it. So let's start with coffee and then let's look more broadly. Is that a concern that Fairtrade USA has?
You know, it's not a concern for us because one size doesn't fit all. I think really, of course, our model, the vision that we have is trying to change big global supply chains. So working with the largest coffee companies in the world to some of the smaller ones. I mean, anyone who can buy from a Fairtrade certified farm, we want to see in the program. But there's going to, of course, be, you know, agricultural growers and maybe, you know, people who are making beautiful crafts who having that kind of rigorous audit does not apply to them. And so this is why these kind of direct trade movements and, you know, direct sourcing, I think there's a huge place for this and it's so important. So, you know, we see that there's room for all of this. It's a big tent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for fair trade, for the factory
suppliers that we work in and the companies we work in, the Athletas and the West Elms and the Patagonias of the world, they're buying from quite large global factories. So Fairtrade is a great fit for them. And it's a scalable model in which we can enroll more and more companies to become a part of it. But there's also has to be good solutions for smaller supply chains. And I think Anne has a great point. And that's where, you know, direct trade and other sort of movements like maybe the Fair Trade Federation that really works with artisans have a great role to play.
Yeah, I think that, I think that's what Renee Colon, co-owner of Fuego Coffee Roasters, was saying earlier, that it, you know, in your mind, it doesn't seem like it's either or sometimes when you see either research or articles kind of breaking down what is fair trade, what is direct trade, it kind of pits one against the other. And what Maya Spall is saying to us from Fairtrade USA is it can be complementary. Do you see it that way, Renee?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It definitely can be complementary. It's not like you have to choose one over the other. But our work in Guatemala, I think, is a very good example. When we were in there helping launch our sister roastery and cafe in Guatemala, it's a third world country. And like the farmers there in Guatemala, and it's some of the best coffee we've ever had, mm-hmm. comes from Guatemala. But they don't have extra money. And it is much more difficult for them to meet all the criteria and pay all the necessary fees to get the certification.
Okay, I want to grab another phone call, and I will make sure that, Maya, I'll relay to you if you can't hear the caller. We're going to go to Hal in Dansville next. Go ahead, Hal.
Hi. Thank you. I lived in Tanzania, rural Tanzania, for several years, and my experience in the last 35 years of trying to act like you're voting with your purchase dollar on environmental and human rights standards, to me, is something I've acted conscientiously on. So one of the first things, it seems to me, is the big box retailers and the consumer hold much responsibility for promoting environmental and labor standards. One way to do this might be to have a system where consumers were able to look at an environmental and a human icon, like a leaf and an outline of a human or something, and have third party, as mentioned earlier, nonprofits who are benefiting from the purchased amount to investigate and do the field work that's necessary, the independent field work, on real labor and real environmental standards, so that you're voting with your dollar at the point of purchase. Because it's almost impossible for a consumer on the face of their brand name or the location or the store to decide. Now, some stores, like chains like Walmart, used to have a race to the bottom. And around the Finger Lakes, where I live, they were trying to have a ring of stores, and I led a very small, humble campaign to stop a store from opening in my area, because Walmart not only discriminates against women writ large, but they also literally compete with having vendors compete down, so that we've seen how manufacturing countries have gone from China to Bangladesh, where so many terrible factory deaths have occurred.
Let me just jump in, because we're going to lose Maya in a couple of minutes, and I want to be able to kick a question her way to kind of close with her, and then what we'll do is we'll break and we'll turn back
Thank you.
Our guests for the rest of the hour.
Offline.
You know, but Hal, hold on 1 second. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I think the concerns and the questions you are raising are broad-ranging and vital to this. But in the as you say, at the point of sale, it can be very difficult for consumers. But do you feel that you've been, you know, sort of given anything that is helpful from the Fair Trade label, from the Fair Trade certification?
Not too much. A little on coffee, but I'm a wannabe, or have tried to use organic farming practices and grow local, okay. and when I can supply food local, and buying at small stores rather than big chains that select and purchase and promote local food, to me, is a no-brainer.
Okay. So, Hal, thank you for that. I mean, I think, Maya, a good way to kind of relay Hal's point to kind of close your time, because I know you got to go in just a second, is, you know, he's just wants, at least at the point of sale, a lot more information that that can help him, that can help him understand where things are made, what the standards are, you know, whether it's the treatment of workers, women, wages, and more. And I asked him, you know, if fair trade is giving him more. And he said, you know, maybe with coffee, but he still doesn't feel like it's teaching him that much more. So what would you do to educate people more about what Fairtrade USA is trying to do?
Absolutely. I think at point of sale, you know, it's such a quick purchase sometimes that there isn't a lot of opportunity to communicate. But every Fairtrade certified product you purchase, you know, particularly with the apparel and home goods, increasingly, there's a hang tag, there's a little label, you know, on that piece of clothing that tells you this is a fair trade product and this is what it means. The other thing I would do is direct you to the website of companies like Athleta, like West Elm, like Patagonia. They're making some beautiful short films about truly who are the faces and the families that are affected and impacted positively by fair trade. So I think a lot of research can be done online to get a deeper story. The other thing I just want to close with that I think is exciting is increasingly we're seeing an opportunity to bring fair trade back to U.S. production. So we have a fair trade certified apparel factory in Los Angeles, and I just returned from visiting an incredible furniture factory in North Carolina that's now pursuing fair trade. And so with the opportunity to look at how fair trade can support, you know, U.S.-based manufacturers and U.S.-based farmers and the worker, you know, the workforces in those agricultural fields, it's a whole new opportunity to support domestic and ensure that all the standards are met around safe working conditions and better livelihoods. So I think, you know, what we're seeing is an incredible increased consumer interest, a growth across the board of fair trade certified products, and expanding to geographies we may not have considered before to really make this a global movement.
Maya Spall is the Vice President of the Manufacturing Program at Fairtrade USA. Again, online where, Maya?
www.fairtradecertified.org.
Fairtradecertified.org. Thanks for taking the time to join the program today. As a Rochester native, it's nice to hear you back here. Thank you, Maya.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Evan.
Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with our guests in studio, Gavin Thomas, co-founder of This Good World, Renee Colon, co-owner of Fuego Coffee Roasters, and Paola Macas-Bechart, who is a worker rights advocate at the Worker Justice Center of New York and the founder of NUA Imports. We're talking about labels, sources of the products that you're buying, fair trade, direct trade, and more, trying to answer as many questions as you have for us before the end of the hour. So let's get that break, and we're right back. Coming up in our second hour, you've been asking about the homeless population, about how to help, what's going on to serve them, especially as temperatures move below zero with the wind chills as they have this week. We're going to be talking about an approach known as person-centered housing. There's an organization that's just 2 years old in Rochester that is now helping dozens of people and families. So how does their approach differ? You will find out next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Connie writes to us and says, hello, Evan and guests. I did want to tell your listeners that the shop One World Goods in Pittsford Plaza is entirely made up of fair trade items and also includes some local nonprofit businesses in their extensive inventory. You may have already mentioned that. Well, the folks from One World jumped online on Twitter to tell us that they've got a store full of customers right now who are loyal to fair trade, and they like to tell the stories of the products that they carry, from coffee to cotton to handmade goods created in cities and villages around the world. So we're hearing from One World Goods. A lot of questions coming in about the system and the processes, so we're going to try to get through as many of those as we can in our remaining minutes. And I asked our guests during our brief break, you know, what stands out to you that's missing here? What are the big questions consumers might have? Gavin, you know, one of the things you brought up was certifications. And I think you heard from Maya Spall from Fairtrade USA. They're hearing the customers that want more information, that want sunlight in the process to make sure that the extra dollars they're willing to pay are going where it needs to. It's a good thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for us as consumers and kind of spreading the word about this, it's important to remember that it's okay to be both supportive of these certification organizations and skeptical at the same time, because I think a lot of the standards that they set forth, we have to remember that there are individuals within these organizations setting these standards. So, obviously, some of that is based on their opinions and what they want to see in terms of societal changes, environmental changes, and so on and so forth. But I think it's important to remember that a lot of those decisions are being driven by the consumers and the feedback that they get from the producers, from the businesses that are, members of these types of certifications.
Yeah, so it looks like if you're just joining us, if fair trade is on the label, it's not meaningless. There are standards. It does not mean that the people who made that product are, sort of magically out of poverty, or that standards are, all of a sudden equal to whatever you would want them to be. But certainly it does look like it is at least incrementally better. So if your expectations are a little low, it's probably going to be met there just because they're going to be making a little bit more, or maybe with better conditions, or maybe better healthcare. Different in case to case, not the panacea, better than the average, and then with more sunlight that Gavin is talking about, whether it's in the fair trade world or other certifications, you should push. You should ask for that. I mean, Renee Colon, do you love it when customers ask you, hey, I love this espresso. Tell me more about where it came from.
I absolutely love it. And all of our baristas, we are so excited when people ask questions and they want to know more about the farm and the farmers and who works there and what else is grown on the farm. We love when people ask questions.
And we're going to go to Jim on the phone in just a second. But Paola, I want to ask you about making, consumers better educated. How do we as consumers get better at, knowing where our dollars are going?
Right. And, I've had the chance to participate in a couple fairs this season. And I see that when I tell the stories of the products, people take the time to learn the stories. They are super happy to buy something, like a sweater that it's 100% alpaca and was, made by women in Ecuador, that they know that they are getting living wages and better conditions. So it's really taking the time to learn the stories. But also, I think that every time that you wear something that it's made fairly and in a good conditions, you become an ambassador of that, and you're spreading the word that way. Like, if I would, ask you now, Evan, where did you get that sweater? Will you be able to tell me a nice story, or it's just like the same, I got it at the big store, right?
At the store, yeah, exactly.
And also something that I like to say is that it's this movement of my store NuaImports.com just basically now sells clothing, which is what people make in Ecuador, textiles, embroideries, and things like that. But I tell people that this is sort of like a slow fashion. It's like instead of buying 10 things made in which conditions, you can buy one thing that you truly love, that you do know that it's a good thing that you're buying that has quality. So really buying quality, being well informed. Like, I love if people could go to the app and go to buying these places and go to Fuego. I also like to think about this as a way of, what if our side won? What if we, all the things that we're fighting for, working conditions, gender equality,
question. What
if our side won and we're already living in that world that we want to? So how would you interact with that world? So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to, be with my actions, do what my values are. Right?
Yeah, one way to maybe get there, because I think it's a fascinating question. What would the world look like if it was exactly what you wanted to in terms of worker fairness? Conditions, healthcare, payment, equality. That's such a good question, because part of that is you wouldn't have to worry about where did I buy this piece of clothing. You would know that everywhere you would buy it from, you wouldn't have to feel potentially bad about it. But maybe one way to get there, Paola, is to say, in the next year, I want to examine my own closet, and I'd like to at least know where everything came from.
Right.
Purchases are made. I can't change where dollars have gone. But I can't tell you. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know exactly where every piece of clothing is. But if I take the time to learn that, then maybe it will change my habits in the future. And maybe that's one way to do it.
Right. And I will invite everybody to at least, do a challenge and for a month wear at least one thing that was made fairly or was made in a way that it's environmentally friendly. In that way, at least, you're more conscious every day. As like today, I thank you, but I also thank all your team. It's really about transparency, about making sure that we all know that we are partners in this, our consumers. I am also a consumer, and now I am, you know, offering products, but we are all part of this. It's not me and them. We're all partners. We all have to win or lose.
All right, so before I jump to Jim on the phone, tell us where to find more on Nua Imports then, Paola.
Yeah, well, so I'm a very small business, and my website is Nua, N-U-A, Imports, with an S at the end, .com.
And NuaImports.com, N-U-A, NuaImports.com.
That's right, yep.
Okay, see, we're all learning a lot here. Jim is on the line. Jim is from Abundance Food Co-op. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Love your show. Hey, Paola.
Hi, Jim.
So we're a community-owned store and a cooperative. We've been in business here in Rochester a long time. We actually have end and goal statements, and just last night I had to do the reporting on our end statement. One of the things that we have to measure is how many products we have as fair trade products in our store. And we have about 7,000 products in the store, and we have 1,000 fair trade products. That's about 14% of products. So our community board of directors is concerned about this, and we support this fully, and we do the best we can to sell as much fair trade product as we can.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. I'm only going to cut the call now because it sounds like, in a nod to the launch of Star Wars, you're calling from another galaxy. But the lesson is loud and clear. And Abundance, by the way, is on South Avenue, right off South Avenue. So it's easy to find. And he's saying that they took an inventory. They're 14%, and that's much more than the world product number of fair trade. But interesting that you're seeing more stores. Think about the emphasis. Think about whether it's Abundance or more. So, Gavin, what does the future look like to you? I think Paola raised such a great question. What does it actually look like if we get what we want here? What does it look like for this good world?
I think, you know, it's certainly important to strive for that goal of perfection. But at the same time, you know, if we're only, you know, play devil's advocate a little bit here, if we're only thinking about that perfect world or what perfection is in the social good or environmentally good space, we're going to completely ignore small progress. And I think that's the thing to be focusing on more. And I think, you know, take the consumer, there's still a very small percentage of the overall consumer set in this world that are actively, you know, I'm making the decision, I'm making my shopping list right now, I'm only going to be purchasing these types of products. I know that before I go. There's a much larger group. Both groups are growing, but there's a much larger group right now that, again, to Maya's point, they're making the decision at the shelf, and maybe they see fair trade or any other certification, and that's the tipping point that gets them to purchase that product. And I think those types of passive decision-making, you know, processes that consumers go through, hugely important to obviously further those and get more of those purchases. But it's something that can't be ignored. And I think that's what's going to get us as close as we possibly can to that perfect world.
This good world has grown a lot in the last 6 years since you've launched. How much?
So we have right now upwards of, I believe, 9,000 or 10,000 businesses listed in the U.S. and again across, you know, multiple cities all over. And again, a lot of that is thanks to our users submitting some amazing businesses. But you know, thousands and thousands of users obviously coming to the site and not only again consuming the content and finding out where they should be spending their dollars or putting their voices, but also sharing with us and with the world, you know, the businesses that are their favorite and kind of share their values and are doing great things for them.
Becca writes to the program and says, what a great show. Wondering if the Fair Trade Certification Group is for or nonprofit. Fair Trade International and Fair Trade USA, which are different, they're both nonprofit. Now, that doesn't tell you everything. I mean, the NFL is nonprofit, and Roger Goodell made $44 million last year. So that's a pretty good nonprofit. But I don't have any reason to believe nefarious purposes of any of the folks in Fair Trade International or Fair Trade USA. But technically, Becca, the answer is it's a nonprofit. And so as we get to close here, I think we've learned a lot this hour on what the certifications mean, on what direct trade and fair trade, how they differ. And I'm going to turn to Renee Colon just for some final quick thoughts from you, because you're dealing with customers every day. And one of the things Gavin and Paola keep teaching us is, as consumers, we need to know more about the sourcing. Do you think we're getting better? I mean, do you think we are moving in a direction from your perspective, and maybe the way you spend your dollars, does it impact you? Are we asking more and better questions?
Yes, I do believe so. When we first opened Fuego, people were not prepared for that type of coffee in our original location on Liberty.
They just came in for a caramel macchiato.
Right. And they're like, why does it take so many minutes to get my coffee and why is it so expensive? But once they tasted it and liked it, then they started asking more questions like, what do all these weird words on the bag mean, and that kind of stuff, and asking about the farmers and the farms, which I think is absolutely crucial.
And that's just in 3 to 5 years. And, you know, Renee and Tony actually travel to these countries. They meet the farmers directly. That is happening. You can find business where that happens. Paola is doing that. This is happening all the time. This Good World can help you with that. So thisgoodworld.com is the website there.
Correct.
Thank you, Gavin. It's been great having you.
Thanks so much.
Really appreciate that. Paola Makas-Bechert, NUA Imports, nuaimports.com. Okay, it's not a .org. NUA is N-U-A, nuaimports.com. Fuego is right near Parcel 5. Tell everybody where Fuego is real fast.
Correct. 45 Euclid Street.
45 Euclid Street. See you in Rochester, Renee Colon. Thank you. Thank you, Paola. Great stuff.
Thanks, Evan.
More Connections coming up next.